This is Athens Unpacked. I'm Sofka Zinoviev, and in a series of podcasts, I'm continuing my long quest to understand this fascinating city. Athens Unpacked is made for This Is Athens, the official visitor's guide to the city. Athens had more than its fair share of crises in the 20th century. Dictatorships, occupation, wars, refugees. But by the time of the new millennium, things felt different. Prosperity was growing. Greece was part of the EU. Democracy was steady. The Olympic Games in 2004 were a triumph. A new urban generation was growing up without stories of hunger or war. What could possibly go wrong? The economic crisis of 2010 came as a huge shock. There was mass unemployment with all the inevitable knock-on troubles. Athenians moved in with parents and grandparents. They left for the village or emigrated. In the winter, apartment blocks didn't turn on the centralized heating. People started burning branches from street trees. It was tough. Here's a short clip from a Channel 4 news report.
At the height of the holidays, a vision of Greece few would recognise. After the debt crisis, one in five people here is out of work. And it now has one of the highest rates of homelessness in the EU.
What's interesting, though, is how much the arts flourished. This was partly because actors, musicians and all sorts of others still worked without being paid. Partly because people have always poured their pain into poetry, painting, or other forms of creativity. There were also some major cultural events. For example, in 2017, the huge contemporary arts festival Documenta uprooted itself from Kassel in Germany and moved to Athens. This was an astonishing honour for a city still recovering from appalling debt. Documenta 14 brought thousands of artists, curators, gallerists and art lovers from all around the world over several months. One contributor was my father, Peter Zinoviev. In the 1960s and 70s, he was a pioneer of electronic music and synthesizers. He worked with all sorts of musicians, including Pink Floyd, The Beatles, and David Bowie, and he still writes avant-garde computer pieces. What you're hearing is part of a collaboration with sound art curator Andrew Spirou, made for Documenta. It's called South Pacific Migration Party, and it's based on hydrophone recordings of blue whales. The second decade of the millennium also saw a mushrooming of ambitious cultural centres. While Athenians were wondering whether they or their children would have to emigrate, they witnessed the appearance of extravaganzas like the Onassis Centre and the Niarchos Foundation. There's a long tradition of benefactors in Athens. Unlike many other European countries, Greece never had a nobility which might have funded the arts. It was part of the Ottoman Empire. There was no Renaissance, as in neighbouring Italy. But ever since Greece became a nation state, the wealthy have stepped in as patrons. The whole world knows of Greece's shipowners. Many of them rose from humble beginnings to acquire Croesus-like wealth. They're famous for their yachts, private islands, and lavish parties. They're perhaps less well known for their cultural proclivities. The latest link between a shipping name and Athenian arts is the impressive Niarchos Cultural Centre, which includes the National Opera. It was designed by the Italian architect Renzo Piano and rises up by the sea at the bottom of Syngrou Avenue. All around is a park with fountains and walkways through mature olive trees. I'm going there to discuss big benefactors with Suda Nair Iliades. I met Suda soon after arriving in Athens. Shopping at my local street market, I encountered a vision of beauty with two young children. She was chatting to one stallholder in Greek, another in Hindi, and answering her phone in French. Born in India, Suda runs Athens Insider, a prize-winning English language magazine that's still going strong after two decades. Her numerous skills also include being a trained yoga teacher and holding a pilot's license. So she's just the person to untangle the interesting marriage of big money and the arts.
I think that the remarkable story about the timing of when the Narcos Foundation came into being was that it was in the sort of very fertile 10-year period, which was the worst in terms of the economic crisis, but in terms of the cultural landscape of Athens, it couldn't have been richer. It started with the Acropolis Museum in 2009, the Onassis Center, which is literally less than a kilometer away on the same avenue, opened.
Of course, between Niarchos and Onassis, there's not only a competition in terms of them being these high, hard-hitting cultural centres, but also between the original shipping magnates themselves.
Right. It almost seems that their personal and professional lives intertwine. You know, I always think that our gossip stories and reality TV pales in comparison to to the stories of the 60s between Stavros Niarchos and Aristotle Onassis. They ended up marrying the same women. And that rivalry somehow seems to live on in their cultural legacies to the city.
I'm jumping in here to be a bit of a gossip. Aristotle, or Ari Onassis, fled Smyrna during the 1922 catastrophe. He went on to become one of the world's richest men, and he was surrounded by remarkable women. His first wife, Tina, was from a well-known shipping family, but it was his long affair with the legendary opera singer Maria Callas that was better known. He eventually abandoned her for Jackie Kennedy, widow of the assassinated president, and the world's media went crazy. Here's a clip from an old documentary.
6 weeks later, the wedding took place on his private island in the Ionian Sea.
He was the one man in the world that could supply her with the security, with the safety, with the wonderful sort of lifestyle that she wanted and had become used to. You know, he was the man that could make up for Air Force One.
Media from all over the world descended on Scorpios. Not even on board the Christina was the wedding party safe from the journalists who were in their own boats. Any notable appearance, as that of John Kennedy Jr., provoked hysteria among the paparazzi, and the Greek Coast Guard had to restore order.
In the meantime, Onassis's first wife, Tina, had married his rival, Stavros Niarchos, who also happened to be her sister's widower. Got that? Okay, so now back to Suda.
So you have the Stavros Niarchos Foundation, which is in a huge parkland and which houses more the classical arts. It houses a national library and the national opera. The Onassis Cultural Centre is in a sort of monolithic block of Thasos marble. It's closed in on all sides, except in the evening when it almost has this translucent quality and you can seem to peer in. And their cultural offering is a lot more avant-garde. It's more experimental theatre, more visual installations, digital art. So it's interesting how that rivalry has played into how, you know, their cultural offerings to the city as well. In fact, Stavros Niarchos and Aristotle Onassis are but two examples of the numerous benefactors who not only helped create the Greek state, but gave it its cultural identity, or its modern cultural identity at least. The Goulandris Foundation, for example, have not just a Museum of Cycladic Art and a National History Museum, but their recent gift to the city has been the Museum of Modern Art. And what's interesting is that they've moved away. There's been a real paradigm shift from these boxed-in, institutionalized museums and galleries. And that's changed to it being a more accessible space for children who are interested in bookbinding, to people who want to do yoga under the watchful gaze of Manet or Cezanne. And I think that's what's interesting as well, in the sense that not only are these spaces really open to the public in the truest sense of the term, but also that art has also moved out of the buildings and into public spaces.
People used to come to Athens probably wanting to see the ancient sites and the museums, but this has really changed now.
It has indeed. And somehow this soft power, which combines culture and tourism, is attracting a new kind of visitor to Greece, someone who's interested in the contemporary aspect of the city, in the new cultural offerings the city has to offer. And, well, of course, we'll always have the Acropolis, but we also have these modern temples to art and culture.
Was a clip from a jazz concert at the Onassis Centre by the Konstantinos Touraitis Quartet. Suda mentioned high-end art collectors and galleries, but there's also a wide range of smaller ones, from the long-established Zumbulaikis galleries, well worth a visit, to pop-up exhibitions in disused shops. Others sit somewhere in the middle, like the artist-run Fokianou Art Space. Organised by Mary Cox and Panayotis Voulgaris, it opened at the height of the crisis in 2014. It's in a little apartment on the seventh floor of a scruffy building in Pangrati. Fokianou is the name of the street. The gallery's aim is to support and collaborate with Greek and foreign artists, and they feature a wide range of shows that are often experimental. I remember sitting on the floor of a small former bedroom, almost underneath a performance artist. She was dancing in slow motion on piles of old books that periodically collapsed. But they do also hang paintings on the wall and manage brilliantly on a shoestring.
Αυτός ο τρόμος που αιωρείται στα νεκά αλαφρούς κι ό,τι καρδιά πεταρίζει ψαλμός μαντικός ακάλεστος κι απληρωτός εντός μου αναδεύει να τον ξορκίσω δεν μπορώ.
This song is by The Boy, with lyrics by the ancient dramatist Aeschylus. Ancient Greece has been a major source of inspiration for Western art in general, and it's an obvious stimulus for Athenians. It's hard to avoid the sense of direct influence when you visit one of the city's contemporary ceramicists, and you see how they've used elements and features from their ancient predecessors. These days, pottery is a thriving trade in Athens, and various workshops offer classes in a craft that dates back 9 millennia to the Neolithic period. And if we think sex sells in the contemporary arts, you only have to look at the daring erotic images on Athenian vases from the 5th century. The finely painted black and red figure works remind us that there's nothing new in the world. Here's a song by Dimitris Koyanis, based on an erotic poem by Lapathiotis.
Τα χέρια σου σφιγόντουσαν στο κορμί μου γύρω γύρω και πεινά μέσα από τα χείλη σου λίγια να χνάσαν το μύρο.
I often get covetous in museums, like in the adorable Benaiki, another benefactor who gave up the family mansion. The exquisite jewellery collections gleam with precious stones and rich yellow 24-carat gold. Clever people get copies made using the motifs, like birds or bees, pomegranates or golden leaves. But it's remarkable how much contemporary jewellery gives a nod to the ancient styles. You can go from little shops where the jewellery maker is cutting brass into octopus shapes for earrings, to the pricey bling of traditional goldsmiths, shops like Zolotas or Lalaunis. The latter even has a museum showcasing their collections, and they reference other eras from the Cycladic to the Byzantine. Recent years have also witnessed a flowering of street art in Athens. There are some big names resurrecting a tradition I'd argue dates back to cave painting. Amongst Athenian stars, I'd include Ino, who often covers the side of a whole apartment block with his black and white pictures. I'm also intrigued by Ficus. His beautiful work combines street art with the traditions of Orthodox religious painting. He's actually a trained iconographer. I'm going to meet someone who worked as a street artist before he became an urban geographer, George Papam, or Papamatheakis, to give him his full name. George suggested we start in Exarchia and walk down into Psiri. I'm interested to hear about the difference between street art and graffiti, which we addressed in episode 5.
So graffiti is usually just a signature to convey the identity of the person who is writing, and usually it's letters. And we have others that are pictures, that they're trying to show something, to convey a message. That's closer to what we call street art. So usually street art is something more catchy to the eye. It has more colors, it's more bright. So in the area of Exarchia that we see a lot of political graffiti and a lot of drawing pieces that try to commemorate events or people. This one is an example of a piece that commemorates Zach Kostopoulos, who was an LGBTQ activist who was attacked and killed in 2018.
What we have here is the entire sidewall of an apartment block that's dedicated to this memorial for Zach. So there's a young man with dark hair, a red t-shirt on the bottom half, and then up above him is his alter ego, Zaki O, from his drag show, with a pink wig and blue eyeshadow and a great green fluffy jersey. And it's both sad, but also there's humour, and it's a beautiful piece of street art. We walked into Psiri, an area that's become famous for its nightlife. It's very well known as a neighbourhood that has little artisans' shops and workshops, and wherever you walk around, even nowadays during the day, you'll see this sort of thing going on. And then in the evening, there's this huge transformation where you get bars and clubs and busy nightlife and tourists.
That's true, and this also has something to do with the history of the area. There were people who were making huts, people who were making tools. You would find things that had to do with carts and horses.
We're just outside the fire brigade's office here in Psiri, and I can see there's a lot of art both on the walls but also in front of some of the windows. What's going on here?
Yes. There are canvases on top, and we also see this, let's say, informal gallery of street art with pieces that were commissioned by the fire brigade. And this was in an effort to cover other writings, to cover other letters and scribblings on the wall, and in a way make a coherent street art gallery. So it was commissioned all together. There is a clash between people who are doing graffiti in illegal ways. They're going out at night and painting, and they believe that this is the true spirit of the culture, that of the subculture that brought it to life. Whereas street art and commissioned street art many times is something much closer to the gallery culture, sometimes to the culture that is, let's say, even the status quo, whereas graffiti tries to go against. There have been a number of programs, schemes from the municipality or the Ministry of Culture that have been active in the neighborhood regarding street art and large-scale murals that were commissioned to, in order to beautify the area. Especially after 2008 and during the economic crisis, there were a lot of people coming from abroad, artists, who came to Athens to experience the situation but also paint.
I really like this wall down here. There's a jazz band that's been painted up the side of the wall. It's very colourful. Do you think it's done by Greeks or by foreigners?
I'm almost sure it was done by foreigners. I think they were invited by one of the galleries that are on this street. That was a small gallery related to graffiti and street art, so they were mostly bringing in people and artworks that are related to the graffiti and street art scene.
One of the most memorable examples of street art was by world-famous Balinese artist Wild Drawing, or WD. The Owl of Athens was made at the height of the Greek crisis in 2016, and it went viral. It covers two walls of an old house, and the work refers to Athena and her Owl of Wisdom, and also to the concept that knowledge speaks, but wisdom listens. We've seen how visual art in Athens goes from the grandest galleries to spray paint on neighbourhood walls. And music also connects with different communities and approaches. I'm going to talk to Chris Humphreys. We met him in the last episode describing his efforts to climb out of an oily baptismal font. Chris is a cellist with the Armonia Atenea, the orchestra also known as the Camerata. He arrived in Greece 30 years ago, just after the opening of the Athens Concert Hall, or Megaro Musikis. I remember this as a very exciting time. Athenians were flocking to this state-of-the-art hall with unbelievable acoustics. You came to Greece to play as a cellist in the newly formed Camerata Orchestra at the Megaro Musikis. That was an extraordinary time for classical music in Athens.
I feel very lucky that I auditioned in London. My orchestra was made up mainly of musicians from around Europe. To arrive at a palace of a concert hall, an arts complex with many concert halls, and I was just amazed at how good it was. I mean, it is recognised as one of the best concert hall complexes in Europe, if not the world. The acoustics are absolutely superb.
And the Camerata has gone from strength to strength.
Yes, Camerata, when we started, was a small string orchestra. We still are. Well, about 10 years ago now, we decided to concentrate more on Baroque music. We were lucky enough to have George Petru, who's a multi-award-winning conductor, and he's taken us from being a local Greek orchestra, let's say, to being one of the best Baroque orchestras in Europe. Playing two children and working with them as well around classical music. That's always great fun. We've played in prisons, anywhere really. I think that's an important part of what we do. We played in the main children's hospital in Greece, which, yeah, I mean, that was quite an emotional thing to do. The thing is that classical music doesn't have to be about education. You don't have to know about it in order to enjoy it. And if we think about where classical music came from, it started, I don't know, 1,000 years ago, with monks writing down the first notes. We went on from that to composers creating pieces of music written down in order to glorify God, which were played in church services. When the Great Schism happened and the Orthodox side of the religion split, they decided that there should be no music making as such in a church.
The other thing is that, of course, apart from churches, it's often been royal courts or the aristocracy who have sponsored music. And because of Greece's history, as being part of the Ottoman Empire, it wasn't the centre of somewhere that was sponsoring and supporting music. So it had a kind of double whammy.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
And in Athens, we have a kind of amazing variation now between these huge, powerful centres of culture, like the Megaromusikis, and then we have a real grassroots flowering of the arts, even in times of trouble and difficulty.
Yes, there are more, by far, better concert halls in Athens than there are in London, for example. But of course, you don't need a concert hall to play even a classical concert. And every Christmas, for example, we come down, no matter what the weather, I have to say, we come down and give a concert in my local park, the Pedio Tuarios.
We walked with Chris to the Pedio Tuarios, or Field of Ares Park. By the way, this is a lovely green space, and there's a fabulous walkway lined with statues commemorating the heroes of the 1821 revolution. Chris brought his cello and played some Bach, much to my delight, and of the birds who sang along. Walking around central Athens will probably hear street music of some sort. If you're lucky, it'll be a year fanfara, or Saint Fanfare, surely the liveliest in town. They're a 20-member brass band with a gypsy, Balkan-influenced vibe. While they do play in festivals and concerts, they're dedicated to the concept of social solidarity and bringing music to the street. Passed around for contributions, but they also work with children and in community projects. They exude an intoxicating Dionysian wildness, and before you know it, you're dancing in the street alongside them. Delighted that if you're listening here, you've followed me to the end of the series. I hope you've enjoyed my unpacking of Athens. It's been quite an experience for me, especially talking with so many talented, interesting people who taught me much I didn't know. One of the worst parts has been everything I had to leave out, especially the rich, multi-layered nightlife that's so fundamental to Athens. I don't mean the organised aspects, like Athens's many theatres of all shapes and sizes, though that is a sad absence here, but the informal side that brings out many of the best characteristics of Athenians. The experience of sitting outside on a warm evening with friends, a parea or company. You're eating delicious food, drinking wine, smoke is pluming up towards the stars. Everyone is talking, shouting, singing along to the music. One reason for leaving this out is that actually the more kefi or fun people are having, the worse the experience for the podcast listener. But there's a more obvious reason for this absence. The making of Athens Unpacked was during times of coronavirus, including strict lockdown. Sometimes it felt like a miracle to get out of the house and actually interview someone, outdoors and often masked. We talked about the city we love, but that was quieter and emptier than we'd ever seen it. And there was lots of cautious distancing and airing out the recording studio, you can imagine. I haven't spoken much about all that because The whole world has been living the same thing, and we hope it will soon be behind us. Also, I wanted to tap into the essence of Athens, the things that were there before COVID and will be there afterwards. Athenians have a resilience that I hope has come across during this series. There's a reason why Athens is one of the most exciting, dynamic cities, and that's because of the people who call it home. I am Sofka Zinoviev, and you just listened to Athens Unpacked for This Is Athens, the official visitor's guide to the city of Athens, online at thisisathens.org. You can find all episodes of Athens Unpacked on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any of your favourite podcast apps. Athens Unpacked is a production of pod.gr. Thanks to Katerina Bakoyani for her endless support. Producer, Michalis Kamakas. Sound engineer, Chrisa Kurenda. Director of Productions, Elena Dimitraiki. Assistant producer, Lara Papadimitriou. Original theme music by Anna Papadimitriou. This podcast is funded by Greece and the European Union. Pod.gr. Sounds good.